You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Some people may take them for granted, but there are certain aspects of our everyday life that I find to be mini wonders of the world. How bridges stay up. The ability to have instantaneous communications halfway around the world with only a small handheld device. How that disembodied know-it-all can guide me on a road trip with only the occasional recalculating prompt. And how veterinarians at UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine have been able to use 3D printers to construct models of an animal skull. Amazing! Dr. Boaz Arzi is my guest today. We're going to chat about collaborative efforts of biomedical engineers and the veterinarians at UC Davis to improve the health of animals and someday, people. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Your dog digs a hole under your fence. And the next thing you know, protect your pets with Dig Defense, the amazing new product that keeps your pets in the yard. Dig Defense is safe, fast, and easy. Each unit is made from 4-gauge galvanized American steel and can be used for repairing digouts, filling gaps, or to hold fences down so pets can't get under them. Dig Defense provides peace of mind that your pets are contained humanely and safely. Visit digdefense.com today. DIGDEFENCE.com.
Dog Shelter Blues, the new novel by Mark Conkling. This hard-hitting story lights up the world of animal rescue with engaging characters and their pets, struggling with their own internal demons as they attempt to rescue innocent creatures that sometimes bring a mysterious transforming power to broken lives. Read the first chapter of Dog Shelter Blues free at dogshelterblues.com. Then come along a breathtaking journey that ends with an astonishing triumph of good over evil. Order your copy of Dog Shelter Blues today. Available at amazon.com and barnesandnoble.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Arzi, thank you so much for being with us. This is just amazing work. Now, you as a veterinarian, how did you get involved in biomedical engineering, this collaborative effort?
Well, it started about almost 3 years ago when I finished my residency at VMTH here at UC Davis in the dentistry and oral surgery service. And then I went into a 2 years postdoc fellowship with Dr. Atanasio's lab, working on tissue engineering of cartilage and bone. So, you know, that's where I fell in love with this field. Enormous capabilities, you know, up to cutting edge technology that allow us to develop and expand our surgical fields. So from that on, you know, we took it and we tried to integrate it with our clinical life. And that has been shown to be a very interesting, a very good way of expanding our clinical skills and technology.
I think a lot of people, number one, when I tell them, oh, your pet needs a root canal, they look at me like I'm crazy. So you've taken it so many steps beyond that. Now, this bioengineered fibrocartilaginous spectrum, one of the things that your group is using, what's that?
So when we talk about fibrocartilage spectrum, we basically mean tissues such as the knee meniscus or the TM joint disc. These are have a fibrocartilage spectrum. So our knees and hip have little different articular surface or little different cartilage. It's a hyaline cartilage versus the knee meniscus or the TM joint disc have a fibrocartilage, you know, fibrocartilage characteristic, which means that it's more elastic, you can stretch it more, versus the articular cartilage that is more, I would say, crunchy or crispy.
Okay.
More, it's tougher.
And you're now working with this type of spectrum to be used in jaw surgery in particular. Is that one of the main indications for using this bioengineered material?
Well, you know, the working with the fibrocartilage spectrums is still in the experimental phases, you know, in the lab, in the laboratory arena. For the clinical work, we're working with engineering or, you know, regenerating jawbone defect like the one that you saw, you talked about with whiskey. And then we have this, the new introduction of 3D printing modalities for the surgical planning. So these are the two things that are right now in the clinics. And the fibrocartilage arena is still in experimental phases, but hopefully will be translated to the clinics as soon as it gets fine-tuned.
I think that's one of the reasons I personally, you're talking about 3D printing, and I know people can go online to the School of Veterinary Medicine at UC Davis and see examples of this 3D printed skull. I personally don't like orthopedic surgery, maybe because I can't do jigsaw puzzles and see in this kind of three-dimensional type of way of looking at things. So here you have a way of printing out a skull, and it's exactly the skull of the animal that you're going to be working on. Number one, how do you first get the model, and then how is it printed, and why are you doing this? Besides, it really is neat.
So basically, 3D printing, what we're doing there, when we are assessing animals that have what we call maxillofacial problem, which means that everything, all the bones in the head, you know, are maybe affected, maybe some of them affected, we don't really know. So what we're doing is computed tomographic evaluation, so CT scan or CAT scan, and we then evaluate it, you know, radiologically, but we're taking it a step farther, and we're printing this skull, which will be an exact replica of the skull. And that allows us to do several things. The first thing that it allows us to do is to have a three-dimension understanding of the problem, to see which bones are affected, or conversely, what will happen if we have to remove some of the skull because of a tumor, how will that affect the animal? Will the animal be able to be functioned? To have a, you know, a proper function. It also allow us to show the owner, you know, if we're doing this, that is what's going to happen, that's how it's going to look, and these are the challenges that we may face. Another thing that is really, really important is if we are to do any reconstruction surgery on a, let's say, resected or amputated part of the jaw, and we're not able to reconstruct it immediately because of the extent of the tumor or the nature of the tumor, we can print the skull and go later and actually apply a plate on the original skull anatomy, original skull configuration, and apply this to the patient later on. So it allows us to do so many things that we were not able to do before, that it is amazing.
Now, I understand this technology is not brand new, that being able to print a 3D print of a skull, for instance. This technology has been around since about 1980s. Why is it just now coming to the forefront?
This is an excellent question, because 3D printing has been around for many, many years. It has been around in not only in medicine. You know, people are printing elements for electronics, for plastics, for many things. It was also, you know, in the research arena for many, many years. You can print elements that go into research later. Why is it coming now? I think that we understand that collaborating with engineers, with tissue engineers that have this technology, that have the knowledge how to apply this technology, brings about the perfect translation. So when it's easily accessible, when it's user-friendly, when we have more knowledge of the capabilities, that's where it's going to come, making the steps into our clinical practice, and that's exactly what we're seeing now. It is also, you know, the technology became more cost-affordable, so we can afford this more. Perhaps many years ago it was more expensive, I have no idea. But right now it's also something that we can afford.
And that exactly, Dr. RZ, was going to be my next question. So here you have UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine combining their efforts with the biomedical engineering department to produce these 3D skulls. It's going to require, however, having a CAT scan done of that animal and then this printing. This can't be totally inexpensive. How much does a pet owner, how much can they invest in their pet to have something like this done?
So that's, you know, that depends on the size of the dog or the cat. To do a computer tomography today costs between $500 and $700.
But oh, that's not bad at all.
Not that bad at all. But to do the 3D printing will add, again, depending on the size of the skull and the area that you are interested in, between $200 and $400 or $500. When we're talking about maxillofacial reconstruction, if you add, you know, $300 or $400 to that final total bill, you know, it's not something that will affect the overall estimate or the overall sum by large amount. It's just a little addition that saves a lot of time and make things more clear for us for reconstruction effort.
Dr. Izzy, that is amazing. I really expected this to be thousands of dollars for each one of those. So that's extremely cost effective. Clients must really like this ability to be able to see the skull of their pet. Yes, you can have models. Yes, you can have radiographs and you can show them this. But to be able to see it, to hold it in their hand, that must really be eye opening for these people.
It is. It's much easier for the owner to understand. It's much easier for us to explain. When you look at a three-dimension figure or exact replica of the problem, it makes everything much clearer for everybody in the room to understand.
Now, I'm somewhat prejudiced because I went to UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine, and I know it is one of the most fantastic schools in the world. Are there other sites that are doing work similar to yours right now?
With 3D printing, I am not aware of. They may be, but I know it's. I'm not aware that in other vet schools it's done. I know that the capability exists. You know, there's many great vet schools around the United States, and I'm sure that they have biomedical engineering capabilities, but I, you know, personally not aware of this work being done.
Okay, my chest is puffed out. I'm very proud. Thank you for bringing this to the world. So it sounds as though this is really very unique. But I know that you've also done something also very unique. We were talking a little bit about whiskey and a jawbone tumor and some reconstructive work that was recently done, and you were involved. Tell us a little bit about whiskey.
So whiskey had oral cancer that is very common. You know, if you have a cancer, it's called squamous cell carcinoma, which is also a cancer that we see in humans in the oral cavity. The location of the tumor were more in the back of the lower jaw, so we needed to amputate a major part, like something like 6 centimeters of his lower jaw. And then what we applied in Whiskey's case is that we reconstructed the jaw after the amputation with the use of a scaffold and a bone morphogenetic protein. Will that allow us to bridge the defect with a material that induced a new bone formation? And you know, Whiskey now has a new bone. We saw him for 18 months recheck. He has a totally new jaw in the part that was resected, and we are really happy with the results.
So you removed a piece of bone in the jaw. You put a scaffolding down. You put in special material that induced bone production. So his own body made new bone, and now the dog has a normal jaw. Is that correct?
Correct. It's exactly that.
And you've done this before, so he's not the only surgeon, I understand, who's something like this has been done.
Correct. We've done overall about 13 surgeries that required regenerating jawbone. Some of them were for tumor resection, like in Whiskey's case, and some of them were for cases that had what we call non-union, which means that the bone does not fuse together because of a fracture. So overall, we have these two categories of cases, the one that tumor resection and the other one is non-union fractures that benefited from this type of surgery.
Have these surgeries only been done in the jaw, or have you been able to do them in other parts of the body?
You know, being, you know, from the dentistry and oral surgery, we focus on the face and on the jaws. So, no, for now, it's the jaws only.
So, I can understand you being involved in the veterinary dentistry arena, that this is going to be your focus of bone reconstruction. with your colleagues there at UC Davis, do you know, are they trying to use this in other fields? Because I can make this big leap where, sadly, you know, you have people involved in automobile accidents, major trauma such as soldiers in a war situation where bones are damaged, or you might have to have an amputation because they've lost so much bone. It would be, I jumped at the fact that hopefully someday they'll be able to reconstruct, your body can rebuild its own bone. Is that what the focus is going to be, this one world, one health, one medicine type of a focus?
That is correct. The focus is to apply tissue engineering and regenerative medicine, now not only for animals, but we do this for also for humans in the research arena right now. And that will allow us to not to harvest tissues in order to reconstruct other tissues. You know, you don't have to go in one place and take a bone and place it in another place, but you can apply, you know, tissue engineering technology or regenerative medicine technology to regenerate or grow bone with the body's own capabilities, like recruiting the stem cells, like, you know, inducing the cells surrounding to produce new bones. So this kind of very, very exciting technology.
It seems almost to be science fiction. It's just almost too good to be true, and you're involved with it, and we really are seeing how research in animals are helping animals and helping people. So this is one of those situations, especially here at UC Davis, when you think research and think that it has such fabulous possibilities now and in the future. Dr. Arzi, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
This is just amazing.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Dr. Bernadine Cruz, and this is The Pet Doctor. I've been chatting right now with Dr. Boaz Arzi. As you can hear from his accent, he is not from the United States, originally born in Israel and now a resident, a boarded veterinary dentist at UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine, working with the Department of Biomedical Engineering, doing some fabulous work in reconstruction and bone growth. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Petco, where the pets go. Petco, where the pets go.
Pet Life Radio has tail wagging, fur flying, fabulous deals for our listeners from Petco. Get $6 off your order of $60 or more and up to 40% off the entire Petco site.
That's right.
But that's not all.
Because you're a Pet Life Radio listener, you'll also get free shipping on your order of $49 or more. $6 off, up to 40% off,
and free shipping
from Pet Life Radio and Petco. To get these awesome deals, go to PetcoDeals.com. That's PetcoDeals.com.
Petco, where the pets go.
Are you crazy about cats? If so, check out The World is Your Litter Box, Deluxe Edition. This clever how-to manual for cats, written by a cat named Quasi, contains more laughs than should be allowable in one book, and is poignantly underscored by the combative yet loving relationship between Quasi and his human. The World is Your Litter Box, Deluxe Edition, is guaranteed to have you laughing your tail off. So, treat yourself to a copy today. Available from Amazon.
Hi, this is Tim Link, animal communicator and pet expert, and host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have you ever wanted to know what your pet is really thinking? Do you want to find out if they truly understand what you're trying to tell them? Ever wish you could build a better understanding and closer relationship with your pet? Well, now you can. Learning to communicate with animals is a four-part on-demand workshop. In the workshop, you'll learn the essential techniques that are necessary to communicate with animals, including what is animal communication, breathing correctly to achieve the perfect state to communicate with your animals at a deeper level, using guided meditation exercises and method to communicate with animals, and how to send and receive information from your animals. So if you're wanting to learn how to communicate and connect with your animals at a deeper level, visit PetLifeRadio.com/workshop and purchase and download Learning to Communicate with Animals. You'll be glad you did.
Coast to coast and around the world, it's All Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown.
From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. All behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand, this is the place for a special paparazzi treat. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
In medical circles, there's a common adage among surgeons, a chance to cut is a chance to cure. If it's up to my guest, Dr. Bill Culp of UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine, that phrase may become antiquated in some veterinary surgical situations. Dr. Culp is a board-certified veterinary surgeon who is foregoing the blade and using radiology to treat conditions previously thought to be inoperable. Dr. Culp, thank you so much for being with us. I'm watching, listening to all the things that you're doing at UC Davis going, oh my goodness, this is Star Trek kind of material. This is just something that is so new and cutting edge. How did you get involved in this?
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Cruz. First of all, I appreciate you having me on the show and being able to talk about this. And my interest came in during my surgical residency. So I went to vet school and then did an internship and then did a residency focused on surgery and honestly a lot of the more aggressive procedures, the procedures where we do bigger incisions and bigger approaches to different diseases. But was interested in looking at other ways to maybe potentially treat some of these diseases. And so we thought, can we potentially have an opportunity to do these in a less invasive fashion? And so the idea of using radiology and when you combine it with interventional radiology, the idea of using radiology to perform some sort of intervention was something that I was very interested in. And so started to look into ways to potentially pursue that and treatment options that we might be able to offer through this specialty that's gaining a lot of interest in veterinary medicine.
When typically we think of radiology having x-rays taken, you look at the chest or you look at a broken bone, you look at something like this. But as I understand in watching TV and looking at YouTube, some of the things that you're doing there at UC Davis, it's actually real time. You're watching things move. People may, who are listening right now, have seen these little catheters moving through vessels or moving into hearts. What are you doing? How are you doing this?
That is exactly right. You are correct. It is essentially the traditional x-ray. We just do it in a real-time fashion. So we have the ability to use fluoroscopy, which is basically real-time x-rays where the x-ray just keeps getting obtained over and over and over again. And it allows us to see essentially into our patient's body. And so when we introduce things like catheters or balloons or stents, wires, different instrumentation that we have to do the procedures, we can see that show up on the x-ray, and then we're able to use that in the patient with basically being able to see what's underneath the skin and the muscle and see what's inside the body.
Now, x-rays give us so much information. You have CAT scans, MRIs, other ways of getting images of what's going on internally. What are some of the benefits to doing this interventional radiology over other procedures that are available?
We look at it in a few ways. There's a few major benefits from the standpoint that we're able to actually do some procedures in a much less invasive fashion. And so our goal is to either use what we call orifices, so holes that are naturally there like the mouth, or into the urethra, different orifices that are there already so that we can gain access into the body without having to actually make an incision. And so the goal of that being that we'd cause less pain theoretically to our patients. The other big benefit is that we can do procedures for different diseases where we haven't previously had good options for them. For instance, one of the things we treat a lot are obstructions that happen in tubes throughout the body, the urethra, the esophagus, the trachea, and we are able to treat those obstructions in a minimally invasive fashion, but also in a way that historically we haven't had good options for. So we may have not had any options to treat those cases previously, whereas now we do have an option to treat those cases.
And some of those tubes are so small. So looking at vessels, I know that you, I believe that you do portosystemic shunts. So this is a vessel issue of the blood not properly going through the liver. And how do you get in there? You know, you can open this animal up and you have this huge incision and you're looking around and how do you get to those little vessels? Now you can pass this catheter and you can see what you're doing. It's amazing. What are some of the procedures that you've done so far?
That's exactly right. The shunt one is a big one, and just like you said, it's when they have an abnormal vessel in their liver, and it prevents them from being able to clean the blood the way that they should. And so the nice thing is that historically, we had to do a large incision on the abdomen and then actually try to find the vessel and dissect it out and then treat it that way. And it was always a concern because having major complications during that surgery is a major concern because of the potential bad things that can happen during the surgery. But we've been able to place, essentially come in through a blood vessel in almost a procedure that's almost incisionless at this point and treat these shunts that way. And so we're seeing a lot better outcomes and with significantly less trauma to the patient and less potential for complications. So the shunt procedure is a common one. The other ones that we treat a lot of are cancer cases. And so, as you were saying, we're treating these tubes that become obstructed with different tumors or types of cancer, and we are able to place a stent oftentimes to open up those tubes and help them be able to do the function that they normally do. So we stent a lot of urethral tumors. We place stents into the ureter, so the tube draining the kidney. We place stents there as well. We place stents into the trachea, occasionally into the esophagus, and then, like you were saying, sometimes stents even into blood vessels, depending on if those are obstructed.
So most people listening may go, oh yeah, I think I've heard of stents being used when you've had some heart issues and you have closed coronary vessels, heart vessels, and they will put stents to help open up and allow the blood to properly flow. I know that you're interested in oncology, cancer therapy, and as I understand, you can use this interventional radiology to actually deliver chemotherapy drugs right to the area of concern, for instance, deep inside of the body. That must really cut down the chances of side effects of chemotherapy to the rest of the body.
Yeah, that's a great point, and that's our hope. One of my main interests is cancer and hopefully trying to find ways that we can more effectively treat that in our veterinary patients so we can improve their quality of life. And so if we can do these things in a minimally invasive fashion, that's something that I'm passionate about and would like to see us improve on. And one of the things that we are doing is, like you just said, where we're trying to get into the blood supply of tumors and see if we can treat that primarily so that we can hopefully do damage to the tumor with doing less trauma or causing less trauma to our patients to hopefully decrease their side effects. We're very much in the early stages of that in veterinary cases, so unfortunately there's not a lot of scientific evidence supporting it yet, but some of the initial evidence from procedures that we've performed is hopeful. And we do know from a lot of evidence in human medicine that there is a major advantage to some of these procedures, and there is a large potential for side effects to be diminished significantly when we do these procedures that are based on performing them through a blood vessel.
After we had Fukushima, that horrible disaster in Japan, everyone has been so sensitized, probably even more so, about the side effects of radiation. So here you have a pet that you're, and yourself you have to be concerned with probably, of using fluoroscopy, having this constant stream of x-rays. What is the risk to the pet? What's the risk to you?
That's a great question, and it is something that we try to be really cognizant of all the time. It is something that we are very aware of, and we generally limit the people in the room to only the essential people that need to be there, and we very much try to limit the amount of x-rays that we deliver to the patient. It's something where it's a time-controlled thing, and so we try not to do it for too long of a period of time. From our standpoint, anyone that's in the room, we all wear protective coverings on our whole body, protective eye gear, and we always keep track of how much dose of the therapy that we're getting ourselves with a little monitor that we keep on our body. But we definitely try to limit it as much as possible for both the patient's sake and for our sake.
interventional radiology seems to be such a new procedure. Are there very many facilities in the United States that are using interventional radiology?
It's becoming more universally utilized. However, most places that are utilizing it are performing the stenting procedures or some of the early stenting. I would say places performing some of the more advanced vascular procedures, there's only a few of those in the country, probably in the range of 3 to 5 places that perform them on a regular basis as far as the vascular procedures. A lot of people are feeling more comfortable with stenting. Some of the, dare I say, I guess, simpler procedures, the ones that we see more common. But the more advanced procedures are things where few places are performing that. And so we're trying to incorporate that into our daily practice at UC Davis.
So if somebody in California or the Western United States needed a procedure that could benefit from interventional radiology and your care, how do they get to you?
Well, a couple ways. I try to be pretty good with my email, and so I do receive a lot of emails from people that are interested, and so one potential way is to just email me, and the other way would be to potentially call us here at UC Davis and say that you're interested potentially in these types of procedures, and it's something that they'll put you in contact with me, and I can hopefully speak to you and get it worked out.
Dr. Culp, this is just, again, Star Trek medicine. It's so fabulous. Ways, and I'm sure there are surgeons that are out there going, he's getting away from that blade. But, you know, maybe someday we'll be able to do surgery totally bloodless, totally without blades. And it sounds as though you're on the forefront of this. Thank you so much for being with us today. I've been talking to Dr. Bill Culp of UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Thank you very much for listening. Please tune in again next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner you can be. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.